Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
One is Mark and John's the other. They're just friends. They are not lovers. It's two old queens. It's two old queens. They're just sassy, not that mean. Two old queens. It's two old queens. Now shut up.
Hello.
Welcome to Two Old Queens. I'm John Flynn.
I'm Mark Rennie.
Mark, I am so excited for our guest this week. So please let everyone know who's joining us.
He's the host of the podcast Gayest Episode Ever. It's Drew Mackey.
Yay.
Yay. Hello, hello.
Hello. I almost feel like your podcast is like a spiritual sister.
Yeah, you guys are doing the movie version of what we're doing, and we just go about it a very different way, but same end result of trying to find the gayest version of a thing.
Do you have, like, is there a current rating? This is the gayest episode of anything?
No, given the name of the podcast, you think we would have put that in place from the beginning, but we didn't. Now you guys did it, so we can't, because we'd be ripping you off.
Sure.
Because we invented a sort of list.
Yeah.
You did. And numbers.
And we're very litigious about it, too. So anyone else who tries to do it, we send our legal team after them. Pretty aggressively.
That's we drove Casey Kasem off the air.
Good.
Not a fan of Casey?
Now that he's dead, I feel a lot. He died, right? He's dead.
Yes.
I feel better about him now.
Okay. There's that great audio of him like losing his shit. Have you ever heard that?
He has
to like read a dedication like to like a set about someone's dog dying or something. And he's like, don't give me this shit to read. Then I got to go into introducing like Pointer Sisters or something. It was just like he was like losing his mind at that.
Was that when he was actually losing his mind or
much before?
It's tough to track some of those things sometimes. So are there any particular TV shows that, even though there aren't officially the gayest ones, feel like they're in the, have a like higher status?
Dinosaurs.
Really?
Okay.
The TGIF sitcom with people in giant dinosaur suits. They do a gay episode where the son experiments with being an herbivore. And it is an extended gay metaphor that went over the heads of every child watching it. And watching it today, you're like, oh, I've not talked to anyone who watched it as a kid and was like, that's gay. But it's very clear once you're a gay adult, you're like, I can see what they're doing. It's very successful and it's very subversive that they got that on TGIF. They're the only show to actually do a gay episode on TGIF.
All right, then.
There was Full House. How many years in San Francisco?
Yes. Like 8 years, 7 years. There is an episode with a little boy who's Michelle's age who grew up to be a very attractive gay man. And he plays what is very clearly a gay child. I think we're going to talk about that one maybe in the not too distant future.
Okay. I mean, they never went to like the Folsom Street Fair as a family on Full House.
Not once.
No one ever hit on John Stamos. That's crazy.
And no one ever thought it was weird that these three men were raising children together. And maybe that's why no one thought it was weird. Everyone just presumed
they blended right in.
Yeah. They're a throuple. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A chosen family. Mm-hmm. The original chosen family, nobody should say.
No, not about that show.
Do you believe in dreams? Like you're like, I mean, you believe they exist, I'm sure. But do you when you like have, are you want someone who likes to unpack your dreams or like, oh, this means something like this symbol, you know, like a Freudian interpretation?
I find them to be very fascinating. I have gotten to the point in my life where I realize they probably don't mean anything. And I try not to talk to other people about them because when you
tell
you, it's the worst conversation. It's like a dream that doesn't go anywhere. But yeah, I've had the weirdest fucking dreams that have stuck with me for years and years. And I can't explain why they're so interesting. I think it's because your brain invents something you did not give it permission to do. And you're just like, oh, that was quite a level of autonomy you decided that you had last night. Okay. and could like horrify you or depress you or gross you out. And you still have to take responsibility for it.
Because it's still you.
Yeah.
Right. You did it.
You can't complain. You can't complain to the manager.
Or you thought
this.
Those things.
Yeah. I always said a thing like it's the emotion you felt is the important thing. Like if you're feeling, I was feeling anxiety, I was feeling stress, or I was feeling, you know what, I feel that's more important than, because I feel like you feel the emotion, then your brain's like, here's the material. We got to do something with this.
There's a way to deal with it or express it.
Yeah. We need to make a setting for it.
That makes sense. I do have one dream that was not memorable because of emotion, and I can explain it in like 30 seconds or less, so I won't bore you with it. Do I have your permission?
Yeah. Of course.
Of course.
You know on The Simpsons how Homer sings the wrong lyrics to songs all the time?
Yes. Sure.
So I had that stuck in my head, like a time when he was singing the wrong lyrics or something. It was stuck in my head all day, couldn't get out of my head. All of a sudden I realized, I'm like, wait, what episode was that? And I realized, oh, fuck, I dreamed that. That is not an actual episode of The Simpsons. It was stuck in my head all day, something my brain invented, and I just assumed was real. And as soon as I realized that, it left my head, and I could not remember the melody anymore.
Oh,
wow.
That's not fair.
No.
That's why you have to keep a dream journal.
I should have written down the sheet music for the song he sang, yeah.
A dream sheet journal.
Mm-hmm.
I used to have like a dream where like in the dream, like I told a funny joke, but when I wake up, I can't remember because I think in the dream, I just had the sensation of you told
Everyone
a funny joke.
You.
Yeah.
You charmed the room. Yay.
I have never had that dream.
You got to.
Treat yourself to that dream.
Okay.
Read a book of truly tasteless jokes right before bed.
It's perfect.
Speaking of dream interpretation, possibly, maybe.
Potentially.
Yeah, sure. Today, we're talking about Mulholland Drive. John, what's the deal with Mulholland Drive?
Mark, let me tell you the deal with Mulholland Drive. It was written and directed by David Lynch. It tells the story of an aspiring actress named Betty Elms, newly arrived in Los Angeles, who meets and befriends an amnesiac woman recovering from a car accident. The story follows several other vignettes and characters, including a Hollywood film director. It stars Naomi Watts, Laura Herring, Justin Theroux, Ann Miller, Mark Pellegrino, and Robert Forster. It was released on October 12, 2001, made $20.1 million off a budget of $15 million. Roger Ebert of the Chicago Sun-Times, who had previously been dismissive of Lynch's work, awarded the film 4 stars and said, "David Lynch has been working toward Mulholland Drive all of his career. And now that he's arrived there, I forgive him for Wild at Heart and even Lost Highway." The movie is a surrealist dreamscape in the form of a Hollywood film noir. And the less sense it makes, the more we can't stop watching it. And he subsequently added it to his great films list. Lynch won the Best Director Award at Cannes Film Festival and was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Director. And Mulholland Drive was named the best film of the decade by the Los Angeles Film Critics Association, Cachet du Cinéma, IndieWire, Slant Magazine, Reverse Shot, The Village Voice, and Time Out New York. And that is the deal with Mulholland Drive.
So, Drew, we asked you to pick a movie to discuss. Why Mulholland Drive?
I picked this because it is my favorite movie, and I will never hesitate to talk about it if I get the chance. But also, I think it is a lot more queer than people remember for some reason, even though queerness drives this entire film in various different ways. And I feel like it should deserve a bigger place in the queer canon than it has now.
How many times have you seen it, do you think?
Like, I would say probably... oddly, less often since I moved to Los Angeles, but probably
too close to home.
25 or 30 times in my life.
Wow.
Okay.
It's like looking at a really odd painting, and every time you look at it, you notice something else that you didn't notice before.
Yeah.
True.
It's like a really nice lasagna.
Exactly.
John, what's your what do you make a Mulholland Drive?
Well, similar to Drew, it is my husband's favorite movie. And so when we first started dating, I had not seen it. He was like, you have to watch Mulholland Drive. So it was one of those things where I watched it sort of trepidatious because I was like, sure. Oh, we had first started dating. So I was like, oh, if I don't like this, this could be the end. I think it is great. I think it's a fascinating, totally weird. I totally could understand watching it 25 to 30 times and still finding new things. Last night when I saw it again was probably my fourth time watching it, but it was also during quarantine. I also had not seen Twin Peaks at all, and that was one of my husband's favorite shows. So we spent part of quarantine doing a binge of all of that. So it was nice to go back to Mulholland Drive after seeing Twin Peaks and sort of seeing the similarities and understanding, just having absorbed more of David Lynch as a, not filmmaker, but because it's a TV show, but you know what I mean.
It's a filmic TV show.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. So yeah, I think it is fascinating, interesting, and I enjoy it very much so.
When you watched it, when Brian showed it to you the first time, was he one of those people who's like watching you watch it, like say, now watch this
part. No, he was very respectful.
Okay, very good. That's nice.
Yeah. I also think David Lynch doesn't require that. It was funny while watching Twin Peaks, there were definitely times where I would be like, well, what is this? Like, what about that? Or hold on, but didn't this happen earlier? And he at one point was like, it's never going to make sense. Like, right. It's not one of those things where ultimately everything's going to wrap up and connect and make sense. And so you have to let go of that a little bit. It somewhat does, but for the most, you know, David Lynch is working from a more of an instinctual place or subconscious place. Once I shut off the part of my brain that was like, so if that person's this, then what does this mean? And what is that?
Which I know people love to do with plot. That. Plot is your favorite thing about every movie is the plot.
Well, not when it's bad. But yeah, it does sometimes frustrate me when things have huge holes in them. But once I sort of let go, it was fun going back to Mulholland Drive, knowing that completely.
Now, if only you could do that with Alien Covenant.
If only. How about you, Mark? What are you bringing to Mulholland Drive?
I've seen it a few times, like two or three, but I hadn't seen it in maybe like 10, 15 years. And boy, does it hold up. It's so fun. And like, I thought it made more sense. I don't know. It is like weird, but it's never like confusing. I don't think you're never like, in some ways, like, yeah, some things don't make sense, but you don't, it doesn't matter. But all the emotion, like, it's so like emotional, like the Llorando, I can't say it.
Llorando.
Crying, Llorando. Yo soy Llorando. Mm-hmm. Like people sometimes say like Lynch is like cold and off-putting, but this is like just packed with like emotion. I mean, it just hits these like almost like operatic heights at times.
A lot of sexy passion too.
Yes. A lot of passion, yeah. A lot of naked ladies, but treated tastefully.
Mm-hmm. We can talk that out.
No, oh, we will.
I like that you guys both like it because I've had I think I'm batting 500 on showing this movie to people. And I just realized that some people are like, oh, this is art. I'm into it. It made me think. And some people are just like, that was terrible. I hate it. And you can't convince them that it's better than they think. It's just it's a non-starter.
I mean, but it's like never boring is the other thing. Like every scene is interesting. There's always something. There's either like a weird performance or there's like just some like a generally scary moments at times.
Right. I agree with you completely. But I also understand there are times where if you don't understand what's going on in a movie, it can be very frustrating. And it can also make you feel stupid. And like people don't like to feel stupid. And so I could understand why someone would feel frustrated with David Lynch. There was parts of Twin Peaks that I was sort of impatient and frustrated by, which granted is a different thing, but it makes sense to me that some people really don't respond to his stuff.
Did you know that this began as a spinoff to Twin Peaks?
Yes, for what's her name?
Audrey,
that's right, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, we don't need to like do a battle of Twin Peaks trivia over
oh,
here.
You will win, Drew will win.
some people don't know that. I like to tell them it's a nice little connection.
That isn't also, I feel like if I don't understand something, I don't blame the movie. I don't get mad. You know what I mean? It's like, it's fine. I don't have to understand everything. That's okay.
You're a much better person than everyone else, Mark. We've established that completely. But I could understand someone at the end of the movie being like, well, what about sealing that black book? And what about this character? And who are those? Like, all of that makes sense to me. But I think you have to sort of, with David Lynch, you have to know you're going to have those questions and it's okay. And it's not because you're dumb or because you didn't figure something out. Right, I think especially with this movie, there were probably some scenes that if it had been a TV series, like some storylines would have developed and gone on more. Mm-hmm. Whereas obviously in a movie, they didn't.
we need to know more about this Sylvia North story. What's her deal? Yeah. How is she?
I want to rent that movie.
Yeah. Well, Drew, as you may or may not know, but I suspect you do, we are looking for the gayest movie ever. So we have a very complex and Byzantine scoring system with which to judge them. So we're going to go through a ton of categories. And at one point, you are going to come up with a category and it will be added to the wheel. Does that make sense right now? No, but it will later, just like Mulholland Drive. Anyway, so here's our current top five gayest movies ever. This is their percentage. So number five with an 89.03%, The Wizard of Oz. Number four with an 89.70%, The Apple. Number three with an 89.81%, The Rocky Horror Picture Show. Number two with a 92.99%, The Bride of Frankenstein. And number one with a 94.83%, Female Trouble.
So Drew, if you had to guess now, how well do you think Mulholland Drive is going to do?
I'm rooting for it to hit in the 70s, if I'm lucky.
Okay.
I do not foresee that it's going to break into the top five. That's a really fucking solid top five. But I don't want it to fail horribly, but it might. I'm okay with that, too.
Well, I don't think we're in When Harry Met Sally, Kramer versus Kramer territory.
Did someone pick Kramer versus Kramer?
Of course, Pam Murphy, the nitwit.
As a joke, specifically because it would not do well?
No.
Okay.
She didn't quite understand the assignment, as it were.
Okay.
She hadn't listened to the podcast beforehand.
Well, it was Best Supporting Actress. I believe that was during Best Supporting Actress Month.
Oh, right.
In her defense, maybe. So sure. Maybe the
that's the gayest
slim.
Movie that has a...
Yeah. So the first group of categories are the canon categories. So for these, we're each going to give it a score between 0 and 100. Then we'll take the average of all three of our scores. So the first category, Drew, how would you rate Mulholland Drive on a scale of 0 to 100 in actual gay characters?
Well, there's at least two, maybe four. Maybe five?
True.
Depending on how you break it
down. The lady at the very strangely placed dinner party with the two long tables?
That was so weird.
And the host has his back to the other table? So weird.
Camilla number two. I think that's Camilla number two. And then Rita, Betty, and Diane. Yeah, that, I think I'm going to say five lesbians, which is pretty good.
True. We should point out that in two of those cases, it is the same actress playing two different roles.
Allegedly.
Okay. Yeah. So where do you stand on that? So I guess we should talk about that. So Mulholland Drive is sort of famous for, like, some people don't know, like, it becomes a different movie, sort of the last third of it, I would say. And some people think it is the first part of the movie was a dream sequence that sets up the third part. Some people think that that's not true. David Lynch has notoriously not answered any questions because he likes people asking questions and not knowing.
Right.
He didn't even tell the actresses. So, like, what do you think? Do you have any theories on all of that?
I mean, I go with David Lynch where he says, you know, you have to think about it and decide what it is for yourself. Like, don't listen to anyone else. Just, like, watch it and have an honest reaction. And my honest reaction is it's five different performances. Laura Herring and Naomi Watts are playing two very different characters. So I'm going to say that counts as four characters.
Right. And then there's the blonde lady she makes out with at the dinner table.
Yes, Melissa George.
You are very good with these.
you have seen this 25
you
to 30
have seen
times.
This 55. Yeah, I would say that's a lot because there are different people technically. There are different characters.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, John?
I think yes. I don't know. I do sort of. Like, because so many of the details in the first two thirds of the movie are sort of overlapped in the final third. So I don't feel like they're completely different. I feel like they're definitely, they connect in some ways and like characters and like relationships. There's something there that doesn't feel to me
like Rita is a version of Camilla, essentially.
Exactly. And, you know, Betty and Betty might be what Diane wishes she was, or like rewriting her own past. That's a common theory. But yeah, I mean, it's also, how do you feel about the representation of them as lesbians? Because I feel like that's something that's not right away. Like, they don't come out and say they're lesbians at the beginning. They do end up being in a, you know, same-sex relationship, or at least having sex.
One of them, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess that I overspoke. Like,
it's okay.
They're queer women. Like, they're probably all bi. We shouldn't erase bi people. They're not straight, based on
true,
what
yes.
Them.
No. In this town,
no one is really.
But then it is kind of like the cliche. There has been some criticism that is the cliche of like the one lesbian leaving another for a man.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's kind of like a stereotype.
And I also thought it was definitely directed by a straight man. Like, their love scenes to me felt very, not totally gross, but just sort of like not, I don't know, didn't feel like a...
It never felt sleazy to me, though.
It felt a little bit to me, but I think David Lynch, I also noticed in the movie, like, he loves his women to wear clothes that are impossibly tight, like so fitted on their body that it is sort of like makes no sense. Like, if they had had a glass of water, they would have had to change outfits because...
Wait till you see Charlie's Angels, John. Gonna blow your mind. So what do you want to give this for actual gay characters?
Since it's they're the main character, I'm going to give them an 80 since they're the two main characters are essentially queer.
80.
I'll go 70.
70. I'll go 77. That's most of the movie, giving an average of 75.67, which is about 13 points higher than Waiting for Guffman. Pretty good.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, our next category, drag queen inspiration. Could a drag queen watch Mulholland Drive and come away with a whole book of ideas?
Yes, I say yes.
Definitely. I mean, you got Ann Miller, first of all.
Everything Ann Miller's doing.
Anything. Yes. I mean, like, her makeup is very drag queen. Rebecca Del Rio, classic, could have been a drag queen.
Just that whole number at Club Silencio is like kind of a whole drag. Like, we're acknowledging the illusion. This is all recorded. That's all.
Yeah. It is a lip sync with a dead drop at the end.
Yes.
Yeah. A literal 100%.
Yeah. And the woman with the blue hair and the balcony.
I call her Lady Mrs. Silencio. She's great.
Yeah.
And also, the terrifying homeless man is played by a woman.
There you go.
All right. Is that supposed to be someone, a character from the, is that supposed to, or we don't know?
No, she only plays that character in that. We don't see her as anything else other than the homeless person. I don't know why she was cast as that, but it is a woman who's acted in other movies. And once you see that she's that, whenever you see her in something else, you're like, oh, no.
Oh, something weird's going to happen.
Yeah.
I thought there's something very drag to me about using your purse as a pillow. Had like drag queen energy to me.
Just having a hat box.
Yeah. Betty and her pink diner waitresses. I also thought a dress splattered in pink paint
for Justin Theroux. Yeah,
that's Lorraine. A specific look. Oh, all the girls who are auditioning for the Sylvia North story, they're doing lip syncs that are very staged and deliberate and very campy, actually.
Yeah, and their clothes.
That was a very like highly produced audition.
Yeah. Is that what auditions look like? I'm not an actor. Is that how they work?
They don't usually have backup singers.
They cost millions of dollars.
Yeah. Okay.
That's why they're so hard to get.
There's a lot. I also loved how like Rebecca Del Rio just enters the stage, like almost kind of like tottering.
Yeah.
And then she has like some great makeup, like the teardrop makeup, and like her eye makeup is really fun. Also, Rita has a lot of robes.
She does.
Quite a few robes on display. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what do you want to give this for drag queen inspiration?
I'm going to say 90 because we rattled off a whole lot that I want to see happen in the world. And if I give it a high score, maybe it'll become a thing I see one day.
I see.
So will it into existence?
You're summoning it.
Mm-hmm. Mulholland Drag could be the theme of the night.
Oh, no, I would pay money to go to that show. Yeah.
Even in quarantine. Uh-huh. I think it's not that crazy overall, but I'll go 75.
75. If anything, like the actual, like, you know, like Betty's clothes aren't like nothing. They're pretty much like off the rack, nothing really.
Although I did like her pink sweater.
Her pink sweater. Yeah. But it's in some ways like a big, like, thematic element of like is kind of more drag queen inspiration. Mm-hmm. So I'll give it 80. I mean, just the fact that they have actual lip syncs and then dropping dead in the middle of your lip sync.
True.
Right. Given an average of 81.67, which is 17 points higher than Best in Show. Pretty good. All right, next category, gay icons. How would you rate the gay icons in Mulholland Drive?
Is Ann Miller, she is a gay icon, isn't she?
I would say so, yeah. She's I feel Tops like, and Taps, isn't that her?
Yeah, but I feel like a lot of gay guys will not know readily who Ann Miller is. If you say Ann Miller, they won't know to picture this version of her or like the dancey version of her.
They'll think like my pharmacist? You'll yeah. know.
I mean, I think she is... a drag queen, like a gay icon to a generation. Like, she's not, you know, there's not a lot of Ariana Grande stands and Ann Miller stands.
True.
Yeah. Like, once you do their homework.
Yes. Yes. Also, Lee Grant is in it. She's in Peyton Place and Valley of the Dolls.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. It's surprising that she is in it as briefly as she is playing there. I want to know more about her creepy witch character.
I know.
Yeah. Right? I was hoping to get more of her.
Yeah. Naomi Watts.
The series.
I don't think Naomi Watts is a gay icon, but the fact that she's friends with Nicole Kidman counts for like a point or two. Right?
Sure.
Yeah,
that's true. Something.
And anyone who's co-starred with King Kong's got to get some points.
Okay, cool.
Is there any gay icon? This is a stretch, but I'm just throwing it out there as a topic of conversation. I'm not advocating.
Sure, sure.
Justin Theroux? I mean, maybe from the Leftovers.
Yeah, in his sweatpants, jogging with sweatpants on.
Yeah, jogging with sweatpants. That's why.
He's so not Justin Theroux as we know him now in this movie. He seems like he's like embryonic version of what he is now or something. It's very strange to watch him and just, I don't think he's hot in this movie somehow. I don't know what changed, but something did.
He's hiding behind those thick frames, I feel like.
His clothes are also very baggy, too.
A lot of gel.
It's true, yeah.
It's a lot of strikes against him.
Does someone think Billy Ray Cyrus is a gay icon? I'm sure someone does.
He's definitely camp.
Yeah.
Right.
He gave birth to Miley Cyrus. Well, not personally, but he took part in it.
He's part of it, yeah.
And anyone who made the godmother, Dolly Parton.
Like, that counts for something. Also, unattractive in this movie, and I didn't really realize that until later in my life. I'm like, oh, I kind of get his whole, like, 90s, like, pool guy thing. It works.
Oh, yeah. Mullet and a tank top skimming out dead bugs out of your pool. What more do you want out of a Friday afternoon?
Yeah, if you ran him at a truck stop, you'd go into the men's room.
Unlike most times I go to the truck stop.
No, thank you.
Is David Lynch himself a gay icon? The gays do love Twin Peaks.
I wouldn't say so.
It's kitsch, but it's not camp. Somehow,
yeah.
I think his heterosexuality makes it fall short of ever being
it's
true
so strong.
Camp.
Yeah.
And also Blue Velvet. Woof.
Yeah.
I love Blue Velvet, but that could be a rough viewing.
Yeah.
And then he literally made a movie called The Straight Story.
Yawn.
So what do you want to give Mulholland Drive for gay icons?
67.
Is Mulholland Drive itself a gay icon? Homes on the Hollywood Hills?
I would say Sunset Boulevard is the gay icon. Sure. Yeah. The streets.
Yeah.
I will say, I'll say 67 as well. That sounds good.
67. Yeah. You know what? I'll say 67. Why not? We're all in agreement here. Given an average of, you guessed it, 67, making it 1.33 points higher than The Sound of Music.
Okay.
Huh. Wow. All right.
That's a kind of surprising.
You know, that's what happens. My mom only gave it a 50. Gay icon. She's tough. All right, our next category. The male gaze. How horny is the camera for the male form?
Billy Ray Cyrus in a tank top and that's it. David Lynch does not care about handsome men.
I do think Cookie, the landlord, white t-shirt, he's kind of hunky.
Yeah, you get nice mustache.
Nice mustache. I love, who doesn't like a white t-shirt? What do you think about the cowboy?
Terrifying.
Terrifying.
Yeah, weird. I would. Yeah. Yeah. No upper lip. Real weird. Yeah.
No eyebrows either. And when you realize he doesn't have any hair on his entire body, it's an additional unpleasant surprise.
Yeah. So, what do you want to give this for the male gaze?
19.
A 19.
Yeah, I'll go 15.
Yep. 15. It's pretty much almost all Billy Ray Cyrus. So I'll give it a 14. Given an average of 16, which is 0.67 points lower than I, Tonya. All right. Our next category, entrances with pizzazz.
We're going to do better on this one.
Yes.
Yeah. We're going to do a lot better.
We got that weird burnt homeless woman.
The Winkies Creep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Almost the entrance of like the 90s in a lot of ways, in some ways. One of the best entrances of that decade.
Literally killed a man by entering. That's something you don't see in movies that often. Yeah. Call Me Coco. Everyone does. That is how everyone should introduce themselves to all people.
Yeah. I also think Naomi Watts, when she arrives in LA, just being like so dazzled by it all.
Dazzled by LAX in a way that no human has ever been dazzled by LAX. Yes. Yes, that is very heightened in terms of performance. Yes. And also Rita, we meet her by getting in a horrible car accident that kills
everyone. Yeah.
That's big.
But very stylish, though. Oh, she's in the back of a limo. What's her deal?
We don't stop here.
Betty has a fun entrance when she comes onto Adam's set. Wherever he just kind of stops and looks at her.
Do you feel like if this became a TV show, she would end up getting the lead in the movie? That must have been where this was going, correct?
I would think so. I can't imagine they're going to have this huge movie thing and not ever come back to it.
Yeah, I want to know.
Because she did.
But it also seems like
did it. So it seemed like she there. It felt very Smash. Like David Lynch doing Smash would be this movie.
I would like to see that.
Better than the Smash we got.
So yeah, what do you want to give this for entrances with pizzazz?
83.
I feel like it had more dramatic reveals than entrances with pizzazz. So I'll go 70.
70. I love that lady. So I'll give it an 80. Give it an average of 77.67. Pretty good. All right. Next category. Hell on Heels. This is like feisty women who ain't taking no guff.
We got a bunch. We got that secretary who was like, something bit me real bad.
I don't think she's a secretary, John. I think she is managing that cleaning supply company.
Oh, okay.
That is based in that entire office. How dare you?
How dare I? I apologize. But apologize to all the managers out there and all the secretaries.
That senior manager puts up a real good fight.
She does
not go down easily.
I love that fight scene.
Yeah.
She's great. I don't know if she's ever done anything else, but she should have.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Give her an atomic blonde.
Lorraine, Adam's cheating girlfriend with Miley Cyrus.
She's always having to kick people out of her house.
Until we don't see her anymore after the mafia guy goes in. I'm like, but did he kill her? Maybe.
Funny overhead punch.
Yeah. I like Adam's assistant, who's played by Catherine Town, who like is very horny for him and makes it clear.
She has
2 seconds, but I want to know more about her. Also, her dad wrote Chinatown.
Wow.
The town.
So she grew up really poor.
Yeah, poor thing. Yeah. Thank God she broke through and got something.
Cynthia.
Also, Ann Miller.
She starts out sweet, but I think in the final third, she's a hell on heels.
But also when she sees Rita, like, I need to talk to you. What's going on here? I don't like this situation. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, true, true. I thought the girl in apartment 12, when they go to that one place, she's like, it's not this apartment. She was sort of,
I love that.
She's like, I don't want to have to deal with you right now.
Do you guys recognize where those apartments are, correct?
The Walt Disney, the Snow White cottages.
Yes.
Right behind Gelson's.
Yes, I drove by them today and I was like, oh yes, we get to talk about how this is like something we drive by every day. It's a very odd thing when you think about it in context of this movie.
Because they're easy to miss when you drive by. They're smaller than you think.
Mm-hmm. And they put up a fence because I think they got tired of Mulholland Drive fans going in and like fucking with the place.
I would imagine.
Yeah.
Breaking into apartment 17.
Where are those vacancies? Also, Rita pre-accident. It's pretty hell on heels. This isn't where we stop, that whole thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. And then even after the accident, it is a form of hell on heels to walk all the way from Mulholland Drive to Hollywood in heels with a concussion.
Absolutely.
That's true.
Yeah.
And then there's that first actress who's auditioning who is like real relentless afterwards. Mm-hmm. He's like, this is my part. I'm going to call you. My manager's going to call you. We're going to call you because this is my part. Give me my part. It's like, oh. Go home. Well,
there's also that casting director lady when they're walking Betty to the elevator. He's like, oh, he's an idiot. Oh, don't. She has to explain what being catty is to her. Like, we're just saying mean things, but don't take it too seriously.
It's nothing to do with you.
No. So what do you want to give this for Hell on Heels?
84, because it's one more than 83.
You know what? That's a good
logic. Good logic. Yeah. Actually, speaking of that scene, I think that scene that comes right before that, when Naomi Watts is auditioning in that room at the movie, that was the first time I was like, when I first saw the movie, I was like, holy shit, that scene is incredible. What she does in that scene is such a surprise. You don't think she's that good of an actress and she blows you away. It's like, truly to me, like when this movie became, I was like, oh, this movie is incredible. Like I liked it, I was enjoying it up to that point, but for me at that point, it like transcended. And I think she does, she's kind of hell on heels within that scene, like within the scene that she is auditioning with.
I agree. She goes for it in a very big way and doesn't care if it comes off as like too smutty or too much. And also, I think it's when all of us realize that Naomi Watts is also a fantastic actress.
Yeah. I mean, because saying like it's such a switch from how she is through most of the movie of this like bright-eyed, bushy-tailed ingenue.
Yeah. It sort of was like reminded me of, we've talked about this in the past, of like when there's a movie or TV show where like someone's writing a hit song and like that's like such a huge plot point, and then you hear the song and everyone's like, it's a hit, and you're like, it's fine.
Not a hit.
Yeah. And this was like, you know, someone would be like, her audition was amazing, but you see and you're like, no, that was amazing. That did blow you away.
It had to deliver.
Yeah, like
they do that in delivered. the uh in the Tim Burton Alice in Wonderland, where like the Mad Hatter has to do like, I'm going to do this dance and you're all going to love it. It's at the very, I forget what it's called. But then he does this like dumb dance and it's just stupid. And like, this is what we've been waiting for 2 hours.
Up to this moment. Ooh. Yeah, for that, I think for that scene, I'm gonna go 93.
93, the year Jurassic Park came out.
Indeed it was.
I'll give it a 90. Also, the creepy lady behind Winkies, did we mention
That's
her?
True.
Hell on heels. Literally, she is hell, is she not? In some ways.
Some sort of representation of.
And there's also the little old lady who's always with her little old man, harassing Naomi Watts at the very end.
I want to know what his directions were for her for the final scene. It was like, you're gonna be screaming in Naomi Watts's face until she kills herself, so just like do what comes naturally to you.
And yeah
did it great, I have to say.
They crushed it. Give it an average of 89 in Hell on Heels, which is 9 points lower than I, Tanya, but 66 points higher than Waiting for Guffman. All right, you probably make up a lot of points here too. This next category, macabre. How macabre is Mulholland Drive? I think it's fairly macabre.
There's the part where Betty finds her own body in the apartment, and it's a rotted corpse, and that's very macabre. But like, what else?
I would say so.
What else is macabre?
A limo accident.
I honestly didn't write anything down in this movie because I thought this entire movie is macabre.
Yeah,
macabre.
It's amnesia, sleeping in the bushes.
All those murders, Louise Bonner, that weird, you know, Lee Grant just showing up at a door, just be like, no, there's hell in there.
That makes sense. Why did I think macabre is just like rotting bodies? What's wrong with me? Why don't I understand what that word means?
You're one track mind. Yeah. Crying while masturbating feels fairly macabre to me.
Yeah.
That's, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was like the old couple in the car ride, how they're just grinning after the airport when they're leaving the airport.
Who were those people? Because that wasn't her aunt.
She met them on the plane.
Mm-hmm. Oh, gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
Also, the boardroom of men when they're like passing around the headshot of the lady, like, no, this is who's going to be in the movie. That's like creepy.
And spits up his espresso that he doesn't like.
He's disgusted. Give him the right espresso. He has the power.
The dancing man from Twin Peaks is the creepy man in the wheelchair who's doing something the entire time. We are not told.
You're never going to be a part of the Hollywood machine. Just face it. It's never going to make sense. It's weird. And they're awful. Mm-hmm. So, what do you want to give this for? Macabre.
You convinced me I should go higher. So I'm going to say 89.
89.
I'm going full 100.
100.
The creepiest, weirdest movie the whole time. You're going like that's the David Lynch of it all, where you're just like, something weird's going on. Like there's
an air of menace to the entire thing.
Like, he loves a diner scene, but it's never just a diner scene. Mm-hmm. There's always something really weird going on.
Yeah, I got to give it 100 too, because the whole thing's like this poor, sad, to me, anyway, it seems like this poor, sad, obsessed woman's like fantasy of what her life could have been, and then it's not, and then she can't handle her guilt and kills herself. Give an average of 96.33, which is about 86 points higher than The Wedding Singer. Pretty good.
That checks out, yeah.
Uh-huh. All right, the next category, dramatic lighting. How dramatic is the lighting in Mulholland Drive?
Very.
There's a ton.
Very.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. David Lynch almost exclusively does dramatic lighting.
Absolutely. Especially for like a TV thing. Normally you think, an ABC TV show in the 90s, how good is that going to look? But those shots in like the apartment looks like they're so moody, and like there's this indirect lighting from the side. It looks great.
Yeah. And then the shot
when she's running down that street in Hollywood, it looks as beautiful as it's looked in any like real movie. And I just can't get over how that my city can look that good sometimes. I don't say it looked that way, but David Lynch did.
You gotta hire a DP.
Yep. That's what we all need in our life, a DP. I also like that.
I mean, speak for yourself.
Justin Theroux and the cowboy, like when the cowboy leaves, the light goes out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really good.
That blue light at the Club Silencio.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Now, do you think that blue light was key to look exactly the same as the blue of the cube?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. And there are entire FAQs online with people going back and forth about what that color of blue means.
That specific shade, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Also, those headlights. Very bright. Mm.
Getting brighter very quickly, actually. Yeah.
Mr. Rogue's room is very moody.
Yeah.
I also like in the, I forget who Ant picks up the phone, but the there's that fluorescent light on an arm.
Right on top of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Here's your phone. And also then once Diane like wakes up, like the lighting is so much like sadder. Everything's less lush.
The first time I saw this movie, my friend was not aware that it was the same actress playing that character. They thought it was a similar looking actress because it looked and felt so different to her.
Wow.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, that's sort of very Twin Peaksy.
Yeah.
And the name Naomi Watts.
Mm-hmm. That's true. She's a dramatic actress. High wattage.
The whole thing when the old people come back and like she's screaming, there's like it's these flashes, and then the final like 30 seconds of the imagery of the entire movie. Mm-hmm. I'd say it's pretty dramatic.
It's pretty dramatic.
Very dramatic.
So he's what do you want to give this for dramatic lighting?
I feel uncomfortable giving it 100, so I'll give it a 99.
People have done.
You should feel comfortable. I'll give it a 95.
95. I'll give it a 98. Give an average of 97.33, which is the highest we've had in the last 14 movies, even higher than The Wizard of Oz.
Wow.
We can just stop right here. I'm done. I'm good.
You came in for the lighting and you got your prize. Mm-hmm. All right. Our next category, vibrato.
So for this, in addition to literal vibrato, I mean, anytime they take a moment, give it something extra. It doesn't need it, but you like it. They kind of zhuzh it up. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Based very much along the lines of what we just talked about in the previous category, I would say that there's quite a bit of this as well, but also real vibrato with Rebecca Del Rio.
I mean, incredible. That version's not on Spotify, by the way.
That is
pretty upset about that.
Yeah.
I have it on an old iPod somewhere though.
But you can't play that on anything.
I'm not allowed to. I always think Naomi Watts' performance, particularly in like the first like 90 minutes, is vibrato of like so much the ingenue.
Mm-hmm. She is very much Nancy Drewing it around Los Angeles.
Yeah, yeah,
definitely.
Everything at Club Silencio is vibrato.
That audition where they're singing that song with all the backup singers, that's very vibrato. But also just like the David Lynch of it all, like the
mood of it.
It's so.
That's one thing I noticed this time. I don't know if, because maybe I've never, I don't know if I've ever seen this in like really nice HD before, is the other thing, like on a nice TV. The hitman's eyes are like two colors, like in the dream, but in the real world, they're the same color. They're like both blue.
Huh.
I have never noticed that before.
Gotta watch it again.
You gotta get a good TV. What does that mean? Who the hell knows? Maybe in the dream he was like both her eye. Maybe it's her eye color is one of them. I don't know. Maybe something to look into. Look into. I'll find an FAQ. So what do you want to give this for vibrato?
90?
A 90.
I'll go 97.
97. I think I'm going to go 100. I mean, it's almost the tone of it all is like the main reason you kind of.
Right.
Yeah.
If you don't understand the plot, just hold on to that tone. It'll get you through.
Ride the tone.
Ride the tone. All right. Our next category, footwork.
Does walking in high heels in unison count as footwork?
I would say so.
Some point.
Have you seen those four gays on Twitter all dressed witches? That meme where they're like walking. All they do is walk towards the camera, pause, then keep walking.
We'll send it to you. Sounds great, though. Yeah.
It's a fun meme.
I'm hooked already.
The opening credits where they're doing all that sort of swing dance.
The foxtrot.
Where it's different dub people dancing, but you're seeing two and three versions of them doubled over, and it's that same blue background again.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Means something.
Yeah.
Isn't that the foxtrot contest she won, like in Canada?
Yeah, I believe so.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. I think that's, well, maybe Rebecca Del Rio's death drop,
I guess. Ann Miller's history of dance is not
true.
Really,
she brings it with her whenever she appears.
She does. There's some good walking through apartment complexes.
That counts for something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you want to get? Not a lot of dance numbers in this though. Just the very opening. They get those out of the way. Although I would say the people running out of the box with their hands waving over their head.
That's a very deliberate it's a deliberate gait he gave them. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
35.
I was going to say 35 as well.
Yeah. Wow, 35. I'll give it 35. Why not? Give it an average of 35, which is 4 points lower than The Wedding Singer. Ouch. Imagine David Lynch has directed in The Wedding Singer. Now we got the movie. All right, our next category, spank bank deposits. Anything in this you're falling away to the spank bank?
Not me, but clearly other people might.
Sure.
Yeah, and clearly Diane is, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
We do have that scene of Naomi Watts crying while masturbating.
Crying to the point, like,
you're
going to
put
seriously?
That in your spank bank? That's so upsetting.
But she is depositing something in her spank bank.
We're watching her make a withdrawal.
She's making a withdrawal. Yeah. That's more a withdrawal than a deposit, I would say. The category is deposits.
Crying to the point that her eyes are blurring and you see her blurred vision looking at the wall. It's very, very disturbing. It's a good PSA against masturbation, actually.
Finally.
Yeah.
I think it's just like maybe Billy Ray Cyrus in bed. That's about it, though.
About it. It's pretty.
So we're not allowed to answer for people who would find women attractive.
Well, that's but that is somewhat the norm in most movies.
That's true. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But there is a bit of the, like, the female on female gaze when they're like finally in bed together.
Yeah, and then also the waitress at the diner checks out one version of Betty, or the, I can't remember which one it is, but like she has like a nice little funky cool girl short haircut, and I think that is supposed to be a lesbian like checking one of them out for a second.
That's what they do.
Work at diners.
Cool hair, have cool hair and check out women.
The hitman wouldn't kick him out of bed for eating crackers. Grind him. Make him shower. But he's beefy.
He's still he actually has not really aged a whole lot. He was on Lost, and he looks basically the same then as he did back in 2001.
Oh, Mark Pellegrino. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Good looking guy.
Well, so what do you want to give this for spank bank deposits?
41.
41. This is no leftovers.
I'm going to go 22.
22. Yeah, I'm going to go 30. It's not huge in this. Give an average of 31.
Someone has a fetish for Justin Theroux splattered in pink paint specifically from this, and they're withdrawing all the time.
Yeah,
I do, but that's just me, so I don't want to have that affect this guy. I don't feel like that's right.
That's why I got a 30.
Yeah. All right. Finally, the last of the canon categories. On a scale of 0 to 100, how likely are you to recommend Mulholland Drive to a gay person?
Very, with the caveat of, if I think they're going to be offended by the fact that all the queer women die at the end of this movie, I would not recommend it, because a lot of people don't want to see that, I realize. Once you get past all the queer women being murdered, then it's a pretty good recommendation, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's also less disturbing, though, which says something. It's less disturbing than Blue Velvet or like Eraserhead in some ways.
Overall, yeah. Mm-hmm. With some caveats, I would be fairly likely to recommend this to most gay people I know.
Gay people love Hollywood. Mm-hmm. It's all about the Hollywood machine. They love dreams.
Mm-hmm. Love kitsch.
Kitsch. Sure. We love singers. We love theatrical presentations.
We love people auditioning for things.
We love wigs.
Limo accidents. Yes. Mm-hmm. So what would you give it on a scale of 0 to 100? How likely?
Based on my own experience, I'll say about, I'm 91% likely to recommend this to someone.
91.
Yeah.
I'll say 83.
83. I would say 94. I watched the Jorando scene 3 times today after watching it. I find it so powerful and moving. I don't know. It's just so like the dream is over. They're holding on to you. I don't know. It just really affects. It's very powerful.
It is.
Give an average of 89.33, which is about 51 points higher than the Ten Commandments.
Yes.
All right. This is your new god. All right, now we are into the wheel category.
So these are all categories that past guests have brought in, and we've put them all on this wheel, which is an app on my phone, and we're going to spin it 4 times. Whatever categories randomly pop up, we will judge the movie on, and then you will come up with a category. Okay. Which we will add to the wheel. Remember that?
Crossing my finger for dramatic haircut.
Okay. Wearing another's clothes.
Wearing another person's clothes.
We got a lot of that with Rita.
A ton. And if you really think about them being the same person in the second reality, then you get an extra lot of that too.
Absolutely. And also like Betty is almost like the director.
Mm-hmm.
When she makes her change the wig and all, she's like the puppet master almost of Rita.
She is the director, if you think about this being her dream that we're watching the beginning.
Exactly.
The one who's directing the entire thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a weird makeover scene right before they have sex.
I bet the yeah, is that what made you horny? It's like very Vertigo. It's like, is this what made you horny? Is
because you see the female moment? Yeah.
What a night altogether.
What a night they're having.
Saw a corpse, got a haircut, went to a very strange performance downtown, and had lesbian sex, maybe for the first time.
I haven't heard yet, but I do think Club Silencio is reopening in June.
I think there is one in Europe somewhere. Someone opened up a David Lynch-themed bar in Europe that's very artistically done.
Yeah, it has
to be.
You'd
have to be.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's not just a Spanish-style apartment.
and a diner. No, I believe it's called Club Silencio.
Makes sense.
Great. They already had the quarantine seating. You know what I mean? People were already, nobody was sitting together. Everyone was pretty spread out already.
Not a sellout show at all.
No, not popular. No. Yeah, I think there's a lot of this, just swapping identities and all that kind of stuff. So what would you give this for wearing another person's clothes?
98%.
98.
I'll give it an 84.
84. John saying it's no persona. I'll give it a 90. Give it an average of 90.67, which is 4 points higher than what, I don't know why I'm saying, which is 4 points higher than the score Best of Show got for Bulges.
okay. Well, here we go. Bondage.
Bondage. Mm. Well, I guess it'd be like emotional bondage in some ways. Like Betty is bonded to Rita, okay. Camilla, the real Camilla in some ways. She's trapped by her.
They are trapped
That's
in
a stretch.
Fictional reality at the beginning. And when they're at Club Silencio, and if you think that this is all Betty's dream that she's holding together, something about Club Silencio where they're like, there isn't a band, there isn't an orchestra, this is all fake, it's all performance, and Betty starts shaking uncontrollably, and Rita has to grab her to make her stop shaking.
That's true.
I think it's because her hold on this whole reality is about to break up because the performance art is just too good, and she's losing sense for herself. But that counts for like a point and a half.
Sure.
Yeah.
There's also like rumbling on the soundtrack that you hear, like it seems like the whole world's about to collapse.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is there any actual like tying up? People get held, I guess, like when the director.
I mean, you could
say manhandles his wife a little bit.
Mm-hmm. You could also say that the producer guys are bonding Justin Theroux, like they're like, you have to make this movie with this actress. Maybe
sure.
There's something with that.
Like control and like power, like people who are wielding power from invisible places is a big theme in the movie, so that counts for another point.
Also, now. Betty and Camilla, Betty over Camilla is kind of she has all the power in that dynamic.
Yeah, she's kind of her captor because Rita doesn't have another place to stay and doesn't know who she is. So,
right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You guys make a good argument.
Yeah. I mean, it's no bound.
No.
Have you done that yet? You must have done that yet.
No,
we haven't.
No one's brought it in.
That's going to win. Jesus Christ.
We'll see.
Someone get on that. Okay.
How's the footwork, though?
Are there feet?
I remember there's a lot of paint splatter.
Mm hmm. Mm hmm.
Yeah, so what would you give this for bondage?
I'm going to say 65.
65! Up there with the third, 50 Shades.
I will say 27.
27. Yeah, just because the fact, we got to have somewhere to go if someone does make the misguided decision to bring in a 50 Shades movie. So I'll give it a 25. Give it an average of 39. Meh. I wonder if Dune, like how camp, that's got to be campier than Mulholland Drive.
It's rough. It's a rough watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe the
I used
one.
To have the storybook as a kid, though, like you would get from like the Scholastic Book Fair.
Oh, that's.
And I had the pictorial storybook of Dune. And I would like flip through the, like, I think that's the best way to experience David Lynch's Dune.
It's just
the photo storybook. Because I was like, this movie looks amazing. Yeah.
Okay, here we go. Cheerworthy cameos.
Lee Grant.
Mm-hmm. Also Rena Riffle.
Rena Riffle, Showgirls.
And her nipples.
Director of Showgirls 2.
Mm-hmm.
She directed Showgirls 2. I did not know that.
And wrote it, I think.
Wrote and directed, yeah.
Oh, because it's all about her character, right? She wrote a sequel.
Sure.
Good for
Penny,
her. You know
right?
what? Good,
Penny,
yeah, good for Penny. Pennies from Heaven. It's called Pennies from Heaven.
That's true.
That's exactly what it should have been called if you're making that movie about yourself. She did a great job. Who else?
She did everything correctly.
Lee Grant and Rena Riffle were the only two that I got.
Robert Forster.
Oh, that's true.
He's in one scene.
Yeah, it's weird that he's even. It's weird that he's billed as high as he is in this movie because he just is completely absent from the movie.
The guy in the Winkies scene. He's like that one guy who's been like a million things.
Right.
He's back at the end story. Now.
He
Very
does.
Briefly.
Right.
That's still not a cameo.
Pink's hot dog.
Certain locations are
fun. I did say, oh, Pink's hot dog.
In this scene with Rena Riffle, there's a Yellowstone clothing that's apparent in the background. I'm like, I remember that. I don't think it exists anymore. But no.
What was Yellowstone clothing?
It was a overpriced vintage shop that you went to when you wanted to be cool in your early 20s and didn't realize how much you're being gouged for like old t-shirts. No.
$40? No, thank yeah. you. So what do you want to give this for cheer-worthy cameos?
39.
I was very excited for both Rena Riffle and Lee Grant, so I'm going to go 66.
All your life, John. You're
all my life.
For Rena Riffle. yeah, I'll go 39 as well, giving an average of 41.33. And then we're into wheel category number two or four. Mm-hmm. I'll shut up.
Openly weeping.
Well,
there's a performance of the song Yorondo.
Yeah. So
that counts for a lot.
Yeah.
Christurbating.
Christurbating, which is not masturbating to Christ.
No.
Just so we're clear. Mm-hmm. And they're crying while watching the performance of Yorondo.
They are. Mm-hmm.
Those are pretty iconic moments within the movie as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can't really, none other come to mind because.
Does she cry right before she. Spoiler alert, shoots herself.
She's screaming.
Yeah, she's screaming. Crying. That counts as something, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Crying out.
She's not thrilled.
She's not smiling. She's
not happy to see Irene at all.
No.
Yeah.
Your beloved, is that, that's her aunt though, right? That's her, not the people from the airplane, or is that the people from the airplane?
Those are the people from the airplane. The aunt is Aunt Ruth, and we only see her
when
she shows up again the second
time. No, I mean, that's not the people, but who are the people at the very beginning when she's like the foxtrot, you see her like in that white glow and two old people at her side?
I think that is actually-
The people from the plane?
I believe it is.
Yeah, that's the transition to the plane, I think.
Yeah.
Well, what do you want to give this for openly weeping?
I'll give it a 85.
85.
I'll go 71.
71. I mean, 79.
All right.
Give an average of 78.33. All right, Drew, the time has come for you to add a category, which we can use to judge Mulholland Drive and then every subsequent movie, as it will be added to the wheel.
So John sent me the list and he had a good look, and I don't believe this is represented so far, but snob appeal.
Like four snobs?
Like, because this is a movie where if someone's like, I didn't like it, you can be like, oh, you didn't actually get it. Here, let me explain. First of all, it's one of those movies that like a person can sound like a very cultured jackass if like, in a condescending explanation of why this movie actually is good, despite what your stupid mind might think. And there's a lot of, like, gay people love doing this. So.
It's like a Fraser Crane element.
Fraser Twain, yes.
Fraser Twain,
yes.
Yeah, yeah. Or just like any like culture like homosexual who is always like, here, I'll teach you everything about it. I'm going to do this nice thing and tell you all about this thing. You did not ask me to explain to
you. It exhausts me to do this, but I'll do it anyways. I shouldn't have to.
Yeah, it's sort of like gay mansplaining, I guess.
Yes. Yeah, that is the best actual explanation. I think women could also do it, but men do it a lot more often.
Mary-splaining? Mm-hmm.
Mary-splaining, sure.
Mary-splaining, yeah. I'm good at that. Yeah, a very real gay problem that we have to confront.
So, what would you give Mulholland Drive for snob appeal?
I would give it a solid like 90 because a lot of people get frustrated by this film because of all the reasons we talked about.
Yeah,
no. Yeah. I will go 90 as well.
90. I mean, yeah, it's David Lynch. He's NPR can't get enough. I'll give it a 90, giving an average of 90. I mean, if the French adore you, what more do you need to know? All right, now we are into the bonus category.
These categories are just bonus. So it works rating from 0 to 10. If it doesn't do well, it's not going to affect the movie negatively in any of these categories. These are just extra bonus categories. So again, 0 to 10 for these.
Mm-hmm. All right, so this first one, musical potential. Could they make Mulholland Drive the musical?
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. If Rockwell did it, I would go, if R.I.P., I would go see it.
It's not a show that Rockwell would probably ever do.
Music from like by the Spice Girls or something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it lends itself. There's the whole Hollywood aspect of it too. And love obsession. I mean, these are themes musicals like. Am I wrong? John looks pained by this conversation.
I wouldn't say pained. I'm just trying to think of like what the musical world of this musical version of Mulholland Drive would be. Like, what is the tone of it?
I think, I mean, it would like,
Maybe like a cabaret?
I think it would be comedy. 50s, 60s pop jukebox musical, which might not actually be good, but that's probably what they would go with on first impulse.
All Connie Stevens music?
No, oh, maybe.
Have you heard her Vacation? Ah, that is a fun song.
I mean, you definitely, I mean, obviously anything can be a musical, so sure.
You didn't say good musical. It's like,
right, yeah, exactly. That's true. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. This could be like it's more, this would really have to lean into like the dream ballet of musical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it would be really tough to feel like, oh, the musical version like brings, like raises it up or like it somehow elevates it in some way. Like, I don't see... I think it's sort of like with Sunset Boulevard, like there is a musical of it, but it's like, meh, it's not good.
My belief that there could be a musical version of this is probably wholly reliant on the fact that there is a musical version of Sunset Boulevard.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So what would you give this for 0 to 10 for musical potential?
Six.
Did I hear a six? Yeah. I heard a six.
Yeah, I'll say 5. Obviously you could, but I don't think anyone who would want to see a musical version of Mulholland Drive would not actually want to see a musical version of Mulholland Drive.
I think it'd make a better ballet than a musical. Like, modern I could see almost piece. Like a ballet, like just right. strip out like the dialogue and just do, mm-hmm. you know, I think flipping, spinning.
If you tried to make a musical of this, David Lynch would send someone very scary to your house to convince you that you should not do this. And that person would probably break your brain. So
he'd send the cowboy.
They'd force you to do some like 3-hour meditation. Yeah. mm-hmm. Okay, you know, I'm going to give it a 7 for musical potential.
That's nice of you.
Be plucky, somebody. if Amanda Palmer wasn't so terrible, she'd probably love to do it. Give it an average of 6 in musical potential. All right, next category, queer menace. Are there any queer menaces in Mulholland Drive?
Yeah, yes.
I mean, isn't that kind of what Betty is ultimately?
But the entire movie is one of the reasons it's problematic is that it's kind of vilifying lesbian lust in a really gross way. But once he gets back that, it's a good movie. But like, she's very much so a menace. Her unrequited love for Rita or Camilla or whoever she is ends up killing them both. So it's bad.
In some ways, it is similar to Windows in that regard.
Somewhat, yeah.
Have you seen Windows? Would think it's more like lesbian cruising. Think of it.
Yeah. Oh. Okay. Is it good? Should I watch it?
It's worth watching. No. I would say
it's not good, but you should watch it.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I would say actually different. I feel like Naomi Watts is like the innocent who comes to Hollywood and is corrupted by lesbianism.
I mm-hmm. think that's what she tells herself, but I don't think sure. that's the reality. I think I came to LA with the best of intentions, as this is how you treat me.
Right.
I would also argue Camilla Rita is maybe a bisexual menace. If you think about her breaking Diane's heart to marry the director, but like at the dinner party, she still kisses Camilla too on the mouth in front of Betty. And she's just flaunting the fact that like,
with her.
I'm not yeah. giving you this. I'm giving it to everyone else but you. Terrible.
A real Crystal Connors.
Marks one lesbian reference.
What would you give this for Queer Menace?
10. It's a whole movie.
A 10.
I'll give it an 8.
8. I'll give it a 10. It is the whole movie. And also, the old people just coming at you, that is a Queer Menace. Give an average of 9.33 in Queer Menace. All right, next category. Character actress makes a big swing.
I mean, there's a couple. There's the manager of that cleaning company who was bit by a bug. That's a pretty big swing. I think Lee Grant,
definitely. Yes. Ann Miller, right in her wheelhouse.
Yeah. Wouldn't say she's a big swing.
No, not at all. I wouldn't say.
She's playing herself. She didn't know the cameras were on. That was just her being herself.
Yeah. That's about it, though.
Yeah. I don't know if Rena Riffle is even really a character actress, really.
I mean, and is she outside her element? And I think she's doing exactly, you know.
Yeah.
This like, could you want be my the nipples really hard? Okay, great.
Yeah. Done. Yeah, so what do you want to give this for character actress makes a big swing?
Six.
Yeah. I'll go 4.
4. I was also going to go 4. Giving it 4.67. Next area, witches. How witchy? Is this Lee Grant again?
Lee Grant again. We got that weird
person behind Winkies.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote down Ann Miller is kind of like a jazz witch.
Mm-hmm. Okay, go on.
She looks like a jazz era witch.
Okay, that's
like a
Fleischer
cartoon. Yeah.
David Lynch does have a boner for Wizard of Oz. You don't really see it in this movie. You see it in basically everything else he's ever done. And now I'm thinking about it. I'm like, oh, Lee Grant is like scary witch, and Ann Miller's like the good witch who's like watching out for Dorothy and trying to protect her from all the stuff that's like scary out there in Los Angeles.
Two poles of the compass.
So what do you want to give this? Blue-haired lady, and there's something sort of witchy about her.
Mm-hmm.
Mysterious.
Seen over everything.
Mm-hmm.
There was one IMDb trivia point that says she's sitting in the same spot where Lincoln sat. Okay.
Great.
Someone thought that, and someone was so excited to put that on there, and now you made them feel bad about themselves.
Yeah, I like scrolling to the very bottom of the IMDb trivia section where they're the least people have voted them least helpful. That's where the gems are.
Once you go past that, this person was also in a movie with this other person. You're like, thanks. Yeah. This has really illuminated this movie for me. I'll go 7.
Wait, did I get your score, Drew?
I think it's at 8.
8. I'll give it an 8. Give it an average of 7.67. All right, next category. This one might be tough. Gay actors playing gay roles. Well, Naomi Watts,
No.
And Laura Herring is technically a countess. She was married to a count.
Yeah.
Her title is, she still retains the title of Countess von Bismarck Schnaunhausen.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can't let that go.
And she was in Silent Night, Deadly Night 3.
That was the best one.
I didn't know there was a. I that is news to me.
You got to watch 2. Silent Night, Deadly Night 2 is fun. Right, and includes 20 minutes of footage of Silent Night, Deadly Night 1. So you don't need to see 1. You can go straight to 2.
I love that. That is so
it's
thoughtful
efficient.
Of them.
Yeah.
I believe all the women in this movie are heterosexual in real life, unfortunately.
So the number I'm hearing is a.
I'll give a 1 for being a Contessa because that's kind of gay, but like, that's it.
I'm going to have to go 0, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm also going to go 0, giving an average of 0.33, tying it with I, Tonya. All right, our next category, themes of mothers. There's a lot of maternal older women.
Yes.
In this movie.
There's Lady from the Plane, there's Aunt Ruth, there's Coco. And then Coco actually ends up becoming the mother of the director.
Adam's mother, yeah.
And she's no longer maternal towards anti-mom.
But there's no like themes about like trying to win the mother's love or like bestowing your love on your child.
They don't even really mention mothers at all. Like no one even has
couple aunts, yeah.
Yeah, it's
a lot
of
aunts.
Mother stand-ins mostly.
Mother's not, unless you think of themes of creation, like she's creating in her dream. This is a bit big stretch. Yeah.
Co-host makes a big swing.
So what do you want to give it for themes of mothers?
2 for mom stand-ins.
2 for mom stand-ins.
I'll give it a 1 for mom stand-in.
I'm also going to give it a 1, giving an average of 1.33. All right, our next one, pearl clutching. Were people morally scandalized in this?
Like, does this mean people watching the movie or people in the movie reacting to stuff in the universe of the movie?
Could be both.
Could be both.
I think, well, first of all, Ann Miller's wearing a lot of pearls.
She is.
She does. She loves, and she's not afraid of chunky pieces.
And then at the very first scene, Rita has pearl earrings, and there's a thing with the detectives. They're like, someone lose a, because there was a pearl earring was missing or found on someone.
So, and they have it in a bag, don't they? He's like holding it up
in
a bag.
Someone's holding a pearl.
Clutching that pearl. Wow. And also, I would say Coco is not happy to see Rita in the apartment. She's like, what's going on here?
Right.
She's got pearl-clutchy energy. That's about it. No, people aren't too scandalized in this movie.
Well, there's, what's his name? David Fischler, the guy who tells the story when he's confronted by that burnt, crazy homeless woman. There's something sort of, oh my goodness, about that.
So, oh my goodness, he dies. Presumably.
That's true.
Yeah.
As close as I can think of in movie to like a metaphorical pearl clutching is when they find the corpse and Betty has to put her hand over Rita's mouth to keep her from screaming. And then when they run out of the apartment, they are so discombobulated that you see them fracture into a bunch of like faded versions of themselves that then coalesce again. That's as close as like an over the top like reaction in that style at all. It's not pearl clutching, though, is it?
No. No.
Yeah. This is me thinking on my feet. It's a bad idea.
Great. It's what we do on a podcast. Doing, that's all we do.
I prepare everything before I talk
about any of my completely scripted.
Map it all out. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of work. So what do you want to give this for pearl clutching?
A three.
Yeah, I'll give it a three as well.
I'm also going to give it a three. Give it an average of 3, tying it with Waiting for Guffman. All right, this is the last of the bonus categories. Quips. How quippy is Mulholland Drive?
Call Me Coco, Everyone Does is not really a quip.
That's true.
Does it count as a quip when Betty asks Rita if she's ever had sex with a woman before, and she says, I don't know.
Because I wrote that one down.
it's really funny. It's really funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
Could
it's
you
like
imagine
a horny quip.
Can you imagine if you became amnesic and had to figure out you were gay all over again? That would be a lot of work.
Oh, coming out again.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it right this time.
Invitations, a party, really nice venue.
But it's not like the funniest movie you've ever seen.
No, there's not even like, to me, like that many iconic lines.
No, not really. No, it's not. Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you want to give it for quips?
2.
A 2.
I'll give it a 1.
A 1. Yeah, I'll give it a 1. Give it an average of 1.33, tying it with the Beastmaster.
Okay.
That is, as of the recording, that was the most recent episode I listened to, and it was very, very delightful. At first, I was like, I don't know who these guests are at all, and then I realized what you guys were doing, and it was such a nice listen.
Oh, thank you. I will let my mom and my aunt
know. Putty know.
She loves to hear it. She loves a compliment. Who doesn't?
Why is her name Putty? Is that her actual name?
That is not her legal name, but she's been called that her entire life. It's one of those sort of weird stories and no one's really sure. The story that her family tells is that when she was very young, everyone had nicknames for her. And then it was got to the point where like, we all have to decide, like my grandfather, my grandmother and her aunts and stuff like that. So the story they tell is that they put her in a circle. They put her in the middle of a circle and they all called her their different nickname. And whoever she went to, that was the nickname they were going to do. My grandfather used to call her my little Puddin'. And so that became Putty. So that became her name.
Wow.
She's had that her whole life and literally like her entire life. Everyone calls
what
her.
What a ritualistic way to determine.
Yeah.
Name.
So it's
very Hunger Games. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Speaking of rituals, now we're into the iconic categories.
So these are more broad umbrella categories. We're back to 0 to 100 for these.
Yes.
The first one, how would you rate Mulholland Drive on a scale of 0 to 100 in homoeroticism? How homoerotic is this movie?
So you guys do use homoerotic to mean attraction between two women, yes?
Of course.
Okay. Yes. Two same-sex couples. Anything that's not straight
the normal stuff, not the normal stuff. Yeah, right, yeah.
Yes.
I'm gonna say 90 because it's most of the movie.
Right. I mean, just like seeing when she finds her in the shower and kind of lingers a little bit.
Yeah, that's like a hint. Maybe you get it. Maybe I'll drop it down to like 80 because it does take a while to actually get there. But once you get there, it is the thing you are in for the rest of the film. So yeah,
I agree with that, but it still feels very straight male depiction of it. So it I'm going to go 72.
I'm going to give it a 80. I think, yeah. Give it an average of 77.33. All right, our next category, over the top wardrobe.
Coco.
Okay, Coco. We got the robe that Rita wears. I think Naomi Watts' sparkly pink sweater is very, it feels like it's out of like an Archie comic. You know, she's like Betty.
It does. Sometimes her stuff is very period looking, and the other time it just looks like something they bought at a Delia's catalog.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
There were some points where it looked like she was like a Hitchcock movie, which is probably intentional.
Right.
Like when she's in that gray suit, it's very like Vertigo.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Also, Mrs. Silencio.
And Rebecca Del Rio, of course.
And Rebecca Del Rio.
That is extreme over the top.
The MC at Club mm-hmm. Silencio.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I waited to talk about, but the guy who plays the trumpet and then reveals he's been, it's a lip sync the whole time.
Yeah.
Very funny. but this isn't like crazy. It did surprise me how like 90s some of the clothes looked.
Yeah.
Especially
yeah.
Justin Theroux.
Right.
So what do you want to give this for over the top wardrobe?
57.
I'll go 62.
Ann Miller doing all the heavy lifting.
Yeah. Again, that pink sweater, I kind of want one. But pink is not a good color for me.
I think you just have to go to Old Navy. It's right there for you.
Then I'd have to stone it. Yeah.
Give an average of 58. Finally, the last of the iconic categories, camp factor. How campy is Mulholland Drive?
Yeah, that's the heartbreaker, is that I do not think this is actually a very campy movie. It is a kitsch movie. It is not camp. And if a gay director made this movie, it would be campy as fuck. And I think that is probably something that David Lynch might be like allergic to on some level, is he doesn't actually, even though he sometimes does queer stuff, he doesn't do camp, I don't think. So
there's a couple moments that feel like those, that the couple that she meets on the plane when they're driving away and they're grinning really big, that feels sort of like campy to me. Mm-hmm. And even like Club Silencio has like a camp, like a seedy campness to it, I would say.
True.
I thought just hiding mysterious money in a hat box, there's something sort of camp about that.
Hiding anything like illicit in a hat box, is that, you're right. You're
not
right.
A hat, right.
Even using a hat box for a hat is pretty campy, I would say. Any hat box is camp. I got a quick list of campy things I can go through really quickly. Here we go. Joyride, sleeping in the bushes, a diner called Winkies, making friends with a wonderful older couple on the plane, being asked to be called Coco, the piercing stare of Dan Hedaya, making a big show of not liking your espresso, the fight scene between the lady in the next office and the hapless hitman, the delicious sound of Rita's leather purse unzipping, Pink's hot dog, catching your wife in bed with Billy Ray Cyrus. Is there anything campier than pouring pink paint into a jewelry box, a very intense casting process, writing lines in your bathrobe, a director's notes not making any sense, an ashtray shaped like a piano, Ann Miller handling pecans with her bright red nails, referring to a headshot as an actor's photo resume. And finally, the two very petite people who come out of the little old box.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
There's some stuff.
You have a better eye for camp than I do, I think.
I keep notes.
It's very, yeah.
So what would you give it?
Based on that, I'll give it a 71.
71? That's surprising after how much you said it was in camp.
You are very persuasive, and also I'm very suggestible.
Good to know.
I will give it a 37.
37. John coming in with the hammer. Also, it ends so bummer. I'll give it a 50. I think it's like kind of right in the middle. Giving an average of 52.67. Finally, we're into the crown jewel.
So these categories we don't rate. We all agree it either gets the bonus or it doesn't.
Yes.
So this first one, a 15% bonus for a positive portrayal of homosexuality. Does Mulholland Drive have a positive portrayal of homosexuality? You're shaking your head already.
Not even going to try to make the argument.
Nope. Not going to do it. This is not...
It's not worth it.
No.
Yeah. Doesn't end well. Homosexuality kills you. That's what this movie tells
you.
Yeah. It drives you insane. And then finally, negative 50% of all the points, if this is the movie Boat Trip.
This is not the movie Boat Trip, so it will not lose 50% of its points.
Hey. All right. That's it. We're done.
All right, Drew, so now that we've gone through it, do you still think that it has ended up somewhere in the 70s?
I would guess that, yeah.
All right.
Well, I will tell you exactly how it did. Out of a total possible 2,464.26 points, Mulholland Drive has scored 1,843.26, giving it a percentage of 74.80, yes. Making it the 18th gayest movie ever. Not as gay as Edward Scissorhands, but gayer than Labyrinth.
Nice.
That kind of makes 20. Sense being between those two movies.
I'm pretty comfortable with that. Yeah, I didn't fuck this up. Yeah.
18 is pretty good. Top
That's
20.
Pretty good. Top 20. Yeah. That's awesome.
I'm happy. Yeah.
You did it. Well, I wonder, do you think there's a David Lynch movie that would score higher? Or do you think this is...
You guys should do the new Twin Peaks, because that is technically an 18-hour movie, and I can't wait to hear you do that.
Maybe on the Patreon. Maybe Fire Walk With Me. People make the case for that one a lot.
Really?
I've never seen it.
I would not make that case.
I wouldn't either. I would say this probably is his gayest movie, saving Eraserhead's like fear of procreation. So yeah.
Well, great, Drew.
What a
great
delight.
Movie. What a fun movie to revisit. So nice to have you here. Is there anything you'd like to plug, promote, or shill for at this time?
As we said earlier, Gayest Episode Ever is the name of my podcast. If you type that in anywhere, you'll find it. It is a TV show. It is a podcast where we talk about gay episodes of classic sitcoms. We've done almost all of them. I hope to have both of these gentlemen, ideally, like individually, to pick an episode of TV that they would like to talk about in the future. We'd like to have you on the show. But like we've covered most of the, if you like TV, we've probably done a show you give a shit about. And we, I swear, we don't suck. We really don't suck.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
It's quite a pull quote.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
We'll be right back. We're back.
Mystery. And you hate plot holes.
I don't like plot holes, but I feel like with David Lynch, as I said before, like you kind of have to go like, oh, it's, you're not getting that. So once you let go of that, it's fine. Yeah, I think it, but it can be frustrating when something's like, oh, there's a thing, there's a mystery, or there's a thing to figure out. And especially when they do a bad job of it, or it doesn't work out the way they think they are, it's sort of annoying.
Sure.
Don't you think that sometimes?
I only care about plot holes in movies I don't like.
But maybe that's
a movie
what
I love and like
them.
The plot. I don't think it does. No, because like there are movies I do like that have plot holes, but I just don't care about them.
Gotcha.
Like, it
gotcha.
Doesn't really matter. That's not the point of the movie. You know what I mean?
Like they've won like, you over in other ways. So that
yeah,
that
there's so much you. More that has to offer than just the plot, you know?
Sure, but I think you can offer those things and still have a solid plot.
Yeah, but I don't necessarily think it's an automatic detriment. I don't think it's an automatic fail or a strike.
Well then
I love a mood.
You really do love a mood
I love
piece.
A set piece.
Mm-hmm. You love a tone.
I love a
pretty
tone.
Well
you
established.
Said I have a tone.
You do. It's true.
God forbid.
Speaking of tones, we got a review on iTunes from No Way Apple Podcast App. That's quite a very interesting name.
Oh.
5 stars, but they say, I'm so sorry. And they say, I feel like I'm required to leave you 5 stars after you had to read my BF's very drunk, incomplete email on why you should cover the producers. But also, y'all are my favorite. You deserve all the praise. Well, thank you,
well,
No
that's
Way.
Nice.
Apple Podcast App.
I'm sorry to hear that you're spiraling, it sounds like. Do you remember this email, the producers?
I think it was one of the many submissions we had.
Oh, for our 100th
episode.
Yeah,
I don't think we read it online, but yes.
I haven't seen either version of the producers.
Oh, you haven't seen, really? The original producers is pretty great.
Yeah.
With Zero Mostel and Gene Wilder. Yeah.
I mean,
there's some,
I just haven't
there's
seen
some like elements of it that are kind of dated, but overall, I think it's
a
pretty
Mel
great.
A Mel Brooks movie has dated
crazy?
Elements?
I know. Can you imagine?
I can't. were you a fan of the musical?
Not particularly. I don't think it improved on the movie that much. The original
Even,
movie.
What about the stage show like of the producers?
That's what I mean. I haven't seen the movie of the stage show of the producers.
Oh, you like didn't even bother.
Right. I saw it, not to brag, but I did see it with the original cast. What was interesting is I saw it the week that it had opened, after it had opened, and the reviews were like insane and through the roof. And I will say this, the cast of the show was like the most fearless cast I've ever seen. Like the reviews were like, this show will cure cancer. This show will, you know, bring about world peace. Like the reviews for that show were just insane. And the cast, this whole cast was like so confident in everything they did because like the audiences were like loving it and it was great. I thought everyone in it was great in the way that I've seen them be great in other shows, but no one like surprised me in a way. Like I was like, Nathan Lane was great, but he's been great in
lots
of other
outrageous.
Things.
He was so outrageous.
Right, yeah. You know, Matthew Broderick gave the performance that I've seen him give in plenty of other shows and stuff like that. But overall, I was sort of underwhelmed by it.
So the only thing it produced was apathy for you.
Right. I mean, I would have loved to have invested in it because it's hugely successful, but I don't think it's a great show.
Well, the reviews are in.
That's my reviews then.
20
years after the fact. Yeah.
I won't bother to watch it. I've gone by this long without seeing it.
You'll be fine. I would say, I would definitely say check out the original though.
I almost wonder if it's like the Avatar of musicals in a way of like it had a big impact at the time, but then there's like the interest has just like dwindled since then. Like, is there any talk of like reviving the producers? You know,
I think what happened with the producers is that once Nathan Lane and Matthew Broderick left, it's the box office suffered so well. And so it has this sense
that
without those two, it's not as good of a show, even though it has been successful in other places. I think also just the sensibilities of stuff have changed right now. Like, I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. A revival.
It doesn't feel like there's a pressing need for it.
Exactly. Yes. But I'm actually interested because like with not the producers, but with Avatar, because I agree with what you're saying. Like when it was out, it was this thing that everyone talked about and was so beloved, but no one seems to think about it now. But I wonder if people will. that was a movie that I remember saying, like, I'm going to see this in 3D IMAX because it is a movie that was like created to be that way, sure. as opposed to like the trend of a while, like just make it 3D and charge more money.
Right, right. Did, well, that's what started it. Yeah, that trend.
And so I remember thinking I didn't love it, but I remember thinking like it was visually fun to see it that way. And that I think James Cameron, his scripts are solid. Like they're like everything works, but nothing was like that exciting to me. But I also wonder it was
like
huge.
The Na'vi are just like a bunch of dorks, if you ask me. I had a lazy eye at the time. So I could,
what is this story?
I had a lazy eye around.
I didn't know that.
I had it fixed in 2008. I had surgery on it.
Okay.
So I would wear this 3D glasses and like things would be clear, but not 3D.
Oh, interesting.
Huh. So I had to put the glasses on.
That's when you were like, I've
got to
get
see
this
the
fixed.
Movie. I'm going to miss out on Avatar. But it wasn't fixed by then. So it was just clear. So it was just IMAX. So it was just like, so I wasn't like swept up in the visual, the 3D element. I was like,
that's fair.
Okay.
Makes sense. Yeah. I mean, it'd be interesting to see if people care when it comes back. Maybe they will. Who knows?
I bet they will. I mean, people love experiences.
I mean, it definitely seems like his movies, I mean, these movies specifically, are meant to be seen in a huge theater. You know what I mean? Like, I think it will be successful.
And you know, I love a theatrical experience.
You do. A nice big crowd. Hopefully, we'll be able to do that again.
Fingers crossed. Well, by the time, these movies aren't coming out for another 4 years. So.
Really?
Yeah, it's going to be a while. But no, it's not going to be a while. Our next episode.
Oh, that's right. It's not going to be 4 years from now. Mark, remind me what we're doing.
It's inconceivable to me.
Oh,
that I have to remind you.
That's true.
It's The Princess Bride.
So exciting.
Somerset Maugham, I forget what the name, or Guildenstern, the author's name is like, I think the official name of the book is like Guildenstern's A Princess Bride, I think. We're getting in the weeds here.
Yes, save this for next week.
Save it. Will that be gay? I don't think so, but we'll see.
We'll see. Who knows?
Who knows? But that's it. We'll see you next time. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @2oldqueens, TWO Old Queens. Follow me on Letterboxd where I maintain the current movie rankings.
Yeah, so you can email us at 2oldqueens, TWO Old Queens. Let us know if you have any thoughts or questions or suggestions. We also have merch. If you go to TeePublic and search for 2Old Queens, there's a lot of stuff you can buy there. And a percentage of the proceeds goes to help the Okra Project. So you're not just buying merch, you're helping people out. And finally, we also have a Patreon. If you want another episode of this every week for just $5 a month, you can get that. Right now, we are going through our series of all the Spider-Man movies to figure out which is the gayest.
Spooky.
Ooh.
But that's right. We'll see you next time. Stay safe. Get that shot if you haven't already.
Come on. Who hasn't gotten the shot by now?
Yeah. Don't go to a rave yet. It's not time. We're not there yet. Unless you're in Australia, I guess.
Yeah. Smart.
All right. That's it. We'll see you next time.
Goodbye. Now it's time for credits. We got music by Danny Cohen.
Artwork by Conrad Shin.
And special thanks to Alex Archer and Mike Rennie.
Bye.
Goodbye. We didn't get that right.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.